This is Dr. Shannon M. Clark with A Doctor Delivers Podcast, and today I am joined by reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist, Dr. Tamika Zuri, and we are going to discuss COVID infection and vaccination and their effects on fertility. Have a listen. Welcome for joining us today, Dr. Tamika Zuri from Sanford. You're joining us from San Francisco at Spring Fertility.
Yes.
And we've done the live discussions before, but I thought it might be a great time to touch base about what we know regarding the COVID vaccine and infection and fertility, since that's your area of expertise. So we'll just jump right in and start going through some of these questions we got.
Sounds good.
You?
Yep.
Perfect. First question, obviously, is going to be debunk the myth of the COVID vaccine causing female infertility. Why is it even a myth? I mean, this is started at the very beginning.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, it came from two European doctors, one of which I think was on one of the boards of one of the drug companies, making a claim that the vaccine could lead to infertility. And their argument and their basis was that the spike protein, which is necessary for the mRNA vaccine, shares similar, what we call amino acid sequences. So think of like short sequences to make this protein to a human placental protein called syncytion 1. And because of that, they thought that the vaccine may actually make antibodies against the placenta and prevent it from functioning well and therefore lead to infertility. That myth has been debunked. There is no evidence that there is any cross-reactivity to what with the spike protein to syncytion 1. We have no evidence that there is any impact on future fertility and current fertility.
Right. So that blog was actually retracted and taken down. It wasn't even a scholarly paper or an evidence-based paper. It was just
an opinion.
Two people saying something. And I wouldn't even call it an opinion. It was a blog.
Yep.
And you know, that's being generous.
Yep. But
it really, really, and it's still to this day, it's been 2 years, and we still are fighting that myth. But we do know that, you know, ASRM, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, ACOG, SMFM, the three main heavy hitters when it comes to fertility and pregnancy care have all came forth with statements saying that there is no evidence that the vaccine would impact female fertility. So they all stand behind getting the vaccine. There's actually some new studies about the vaccine and pregnancy, or sorry, the vaccine and fertility. There was one that came out in June, Randy Morris, ASRM's Fertility and Sterility FNS Reports. So basically, they looked at, you probably know this better than me, so you can add in, but they looked at frozen embryo transfer as a model for comparing implantation rates between those patients who were SARS-CoV-2 vaccine seropositive versus being seropositive from infection.
Yep.
And then also those who didn't have seropositivity or antibodies from infection or vaccination, so they were called seronegative.
Yeah.
And this study concluded that there was no difference found in serum HCG, which is a pregnancy hormone, documented implantation rates or sustained implantation rates among the three groups. So, you know, that was a great study that helped add to the evidence. So people are still doing things to add to that, which is great. Anything else to add to convince anyone who's on the fence? Or it's not just people who are reproductive age, it's parents of young females being concerned. Anything you would have to say to them?
You know, I think one, talking to your doctor, and if you do have hesitation, talk to your doctor, tell them what your hesitation is so that we can give you the evidence behind, you know, what you're thinking. Again, that study, unfortunately, through the power of social media, it blew up and became a viral post because of the controversial topic. And so definitely ask questions. Don't just assume. And certainly, like, these studies will continue to come out. I know we were at, like, almost behind the eight ball because pregnant women were not included in these initial studies. And certainly there was a reason for that. It wasn't because we thought the vaccine was harmful to pregnant people. It's because it's hard to get pregnant people into vaccine trials in the first place. And then we're trying to recognize
that.
Or any trial in general. So always talk to your doctor, ask your questions, share your concerns, and let them tell you the facts that we have thus far.
Right. And then also myself on my Instagram account, as well as Dr. Zuri's account, we have references and articles and evidence-based information. And I'm adding that because, like it or not, there's going to be some obstetrical care providers or physicians who are not up to date and have their own concerns about the vaccine that's not based on what we know. And I know that that still happens, unfortunately, but we need to go by what the evidence says. And the evidence says, and there's really no reason for it to biologically, there's no what we call biologic plausibility for it to happen anyway. So the three major societies, ASRM, SMFM, ACOG, all support it, then we need to all be on board regarding the fact that it does not cause female infertility.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. Where are we at here? Okay, this is a good question. Does having a fever after getting vaccinated or boosted affect fertility in males or females?
So I think starting with males, because certainly we can see that about 16% of men, and they looked at studies from the Pfizer vaccine, can develop a fever after getting the vaccine. We do know that fevers and high temperatures can sometimes reduce sperm production and semen parameters. However, that same thing will be seen if you get a fever from COVID, a fever from the flu, a fever from any viral illness. So it's not that the vaccine is causing maybe a decline in temporary sperm parameters. It's the fever itself. And that's not everyone. It's a very rare subset of patients. But it's noted that that can happen. Not again from the vaccine, but it can happen from any viral infection. So if you do experience a decline in your production, you could just wait a couple months. It usually takes about 3 months for sperm to regenerate itself. If you see a decline, maybe when you're about to start fertility treatment and the semen count does not look great, you can wait a few months, postpone, let it recover, and then start again. This is not a permanent decline.
Yeah, so I think it's good to add, like, when you have people that are coming in for any type of fertility treatment, and I'm sure you guys are having the conversation, hey, are you vaccinated? Are you boosted? If you're not, are you planning on doing it? Mm-hmm. And kind of plan around that. Is that the best way to approach it?
I think
kind of work it into your treatment plan?
Yeah. We normally ask patients, if you're planning to get vaccinated or boosted, let us know. That way we just have an idea. I would say, you know, if you're about to have an IVF, like egg retrieval tomorrow, maybe don't get the vaccine the day before, because there's a chance you could develop a fever. And we want to make sure that any fever you get from the vaccine and not from like a post-op fever. But short.
Yeah, you don't want anything confusing.
Right. Confusing. That's really it. It's confusing the picture. Not that it declines any kind of success of the egg retrieval, but we just want to know.
Okay. Regarding just in general, we talked about the fever aspect of it, but is there anything about the COVID vaccine that could affect getting COVID vaccine or booster that could affect male fertility?
Nothing that we know of. And they've done studies on healthy men who have gotten the vaccine, two doses of the mRNA vaccines versus have not received the vaccine. There was no difference in sperm parameters. There was actually, after the vaccine, actually an increase in semen parameters, which I won't say it increases sperm production, but just saying this is regression to the mean. People who had a low sperm count to begin with, there was no difference in their sperm counts afterwards.
Right. So that was a study in June of 2021 by Gonzalez, and that's under my resources as well. But there was another one by Safrai. So those two together have shown that both the mRNA vaccines have no influence, as Dr. Zori said, on sperm parameters, including sperm concentration, semen volume, sperm motility, sperm volume, and total number of motile sperm. So that's really reassuring there. We have two studies that back that up regarding those individuals who got vaccinated, and then they looked at their sperm parameters. So, you know, yes, the fever may temporarily halt things. And again, as Dr. Zori said, if you're planning on getting vaccinated or boosted as a male or sperm producing partner, just make sure you let them know so they can factor that into the planning for any kind of fertility treatments.
Yeah.
Okay. Now this is going to be a big one. And it's a complex, and I wanted to touch on it because I feel like in general, people feel like the, not OBGYNs, but physicians in general, but OBGYNs, I guess, are kind of dodging the topic about the vaccine causing menstrual or having effects on the menstrual cycle, causing a heavier bleeding or irregular bleeding in those who are still having their periods, and those who are postmenopausal, causing breakthrough bleeding, those who are on HRT, those who are transgender individuals, having breakthrough bleeding, and those who are on long-acting reversible contraception having breakthrough bleeding. So what do we know so far regarding the COVID vaccine potentially causing menstrual irregularities or cycle irregularities?
You know, at best we have some good, you know, we have doctors who are reporting this, patients who are reporting this. We don't have any big robust studies saying the COVID vaccine changes your menstrual cycle. That is obviously going to be monitored. And this is not something that we want to shy away from. This is something that actively needs to continue to be looked at. But things that can also change your menstrual cycle, stress, chronic stress, weight changes, exercise changes, other major life changes can also have an impact. And so the purpose of studies is to elicit whether is the vaccine having an impact on menstrual cycles, and then also taking out those confounding factors, stress, weight and exercise changes, and making sure that's not having an effect as well. and that's where that study, it needs to happen. And it, I'm sure that is underway, but that is something mm-hmm. we need to continue to look at.
Yeah, well, I actually looked today, and I'll talk about them, but yeah. Two preprint articles, but they're not, they're more of just kind of looking at getting kind of a survey, but I'll touch on them in a second.
Yeah.
But one thing about vaccines, or actually any study on any kind of pharmaceutical or drug has, and I admit it, looking at, left out looking at menstrual irregularities and, you know, people who can have periods.
Definitely.
And that's happened with other vaccines as well. So we know as far back as in 1913 for the typhoid vaccine, they did report some menstrual irregularities. There have been a few studies since then with small sample sizes on the hepatitis B vaccine, the HPV vaccine, that had mixed results on menstrual irregularities. So what I think this has done is, number one, called attention to the fact that we need to use potential menstrual irregularities, especially after vaccinations, is one of the things we look at in all studies on vaccines. Yep. I think also because COVID was a new, quote unquote, new vaccine, meaning we've never been given on this scale, that people were reporting everything, and rightfully so. I mean, that's what we had V-safe for. And so that's when the flag kind of got raised. Hey, a bunch of people are talking about menstrual irregularities.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of why it's coming to the fore. But this is not the first time we've heard about potential of menstrual irregularities after vaccines. So I just wanted to touch on that. So let's talk a little bit about, and then just so you know, there's the NIH has funded Boston University, Harvard Medical School, Johns Hopkins, Michigan State, and Oregon Health and Science University to look, and given them money to look specifically at the potential for menstrual disturbances after the COVID vaccine. But they also say there's no reason for individuals to schedule their vaccinations based on their menstrual cycles, and that the vaccines can still be given if an individual is menstruating. So just real quick, the two preprint articles, preprint means that they're not peer reviewed and they're not published yet. There is a server called, I don't know how to say it, medRx something, IV.4. I don't even know what that stands for, honestly.
Me neither.
We can go on there and you can look at what's coming down the pike. And so there's two. The first one showed that following vaccination of COVID-19, menstrual disturbances occurred in 20% of individuals in a UK sample. Out of 33 variables that they looked associated with that, they found that smoking, a previous history of COVID infection, and then getting vaccinated are found to be risk factors, while using oral contraceptives was found to be a protective factor for menstrual irregularities, which kind of makes sense. Because if you're on hormonal birth control, it's going to keep your periods irregular.
Yeah.
But they also reported there was diverse, like a whole gamut of different things that people report regarding their menstrual cycles, which is actually more reassuring, because if there really was potentially an effective COVID vaccine on the menstrual cycle, you might see the same thing repetitively, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make more sense?
It would.
And meaning, for example, they're having more heavy bleeding,
yeah,
rather than breakthrough bleeding, or rather than light bleeding, mm-hmm. or things like that. So, but we haven't seen that so far. So that is reassuring. And then let's see, there was another one that showed that they were unable to detect strong signals to support the idea that COVID-19 vaccination is linked to menstrual changes, but they also said that we need larger studies.
Yeah.
And then there's actually three studies. And then there was one that did show that there was increased bleeding or heavier bleeding in those who are, you know, of reproductive age and menstruating, among those who don't typically menstruating, meaning those on long-acting reversible contraceptives, as well as people on gender-affirming hormones, and then postmenopausal people. So, but that was more of a survey type study. Those are really hard to kind of take anything from.
Yeah.
So, you know, the good thing is it's being looked at.
Yeah.
So when someone comes to you, either as a patient or on social media,
mm-hmm.
And I've tried to do the same thing, not to be dismissive, right?
Because right.
You don't, you know, as physicians, we have our ideas, but I just think that, you know, they're doing the right thing by investigating it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What does ASRM say regarding vaccination or the booster while trying to conceive?
Pro. So ASRM is saying if you become pregnant while you are either about to get the vaccine or you're in the middle of getting your series, you don't need to delay. Get it when you're due and scheduled, unless you have some other reason that you cannot receive this vaccine, like an allergy. The second dose should be administered as indicated if you happen to get pregnant or if you start thinking of trying to conceive in that time frame. There is no delay that is necessary.
Right. And I'm sure you've gotten this too. I get messages and DMs that my doctor or my obstetrical care provider said, I need to wait until I'm out of first trimester. I need to do this in the second trimester.
Yep.
I need to, but there's, I'm just telling you right now, they're not saying that based on evidence.
Yep.
They're not.
There's not.
Because
There's no
evidence
data.
does not show that.
Yep.
So the biggest concern is putting it off increases your risk of exposure.
Yep.
And now that we're with Omicron and we need the booster to bring our, you know, our immunity back up, in order to combat Omicron, it's even more important to get boosted. So there are no trimester-specific recommendations. If you do get pregnant, you can get it in any trimester. The only caveat is if you're trying to conceive and you're going under a fertility-type procedure like an IVF or egg retrieval, not to get it within, what is the recommendation?
It was
Within
3 days
how
early on, plus or
long?
minus 3 days,
Early
just to
on.
make sure if you get a fever, we know it's not from the
Yeah.
procedure, it's from the vaccine.
Right. So, you know, that I'm sure your REI doc can discuss with you. So again, if any provider is telling you you need to wait, or it's better in the first, second, third trimester, it's better in postpartum, that is simply not true.
Yep.
And that is not evidence-based, and I would question that. And I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but it's not true. So that's something that everyone should know here. Okay. Next question. Is there a recommended waiting period? Oh wait, you just answered that. Is there a recommended waiting period to begin an IVF cycle or other fertility treatments after having COVID infection or receiving the booster? So you already talked about the vaccine and booster, as far as waiting, and then we'll touch back on, you said with the fever in a male, you may need to wait a little bit longer for the sperm parameters to go up. But what about having COVID infection?
So COVID infection, good question. The only recommended waiting period is to make sure you're not actively spreading the disease. And so whatever the current guidelines are based on whether you're symptomatic or not, whether you had treatment with the vaccine or not, that's going to be your quarantine window. So obviously, if you are in the middle of IVF and you test positive for COVID, your cycle likely will be canceled. The idea is that hopefully you're not getting COVID when you're going through fertility treatment. That's our goal. That's why we recommend, masking when necessary. You're going to get your vaccine, get boostered. So right now there's no necessary predefined wait period minus just the normal quarantine from CDC guidelines.
Well, that would be an even. I mean, I honestly haven't thought about that, but not really should I, because I'm not doing what you do. But that's an even more of a reason to get vaccinated before starting fertility treatments, because if you do come down with COVID positive, they can your cycle or whatever you're doing can be canceled, right?
You're canceled. And so you, fertility, you've been through this process now for 6 months, a year, 2 years to cancel in the middle of starting a cycle. That is
Yeah.
frustrating. That is stressful. It's frustrating. It's expensive. Let's avoid that. And so
Yeah.
again, masking, vaccines, and boostering, most important.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. Okay. And then another question that came through is, what is the recommendation for partners and vaccination booster? I think we kind of already answered that, whether they're egg producing or sperm producing partners in you know, the process. I'm guessing the recommendation is to get vaccinated and or boosted, right?
Do it both.
Yeah. Okay. Any special guidelines that partners going through fertility treatment should adhere to as relates to COVID if both parties are vaccinated and boosted? And you already talked about that, but I wanted to touch on it. You know, you have two or one or sometimes three people, you know, or more, four even. So when you start getting to the more complex third party reproduction, what's generally being done as far as recommendations to protect all those individuals? I'm sure vaccination and boosting is being recommended, but anything else?
Strongly recommended, obviously masking, social distancing when appropriate, and just taking care of yourself. Again, you're going through this entire process. We don't want to have to delay or cancel you because one, both parties, somebody tests positive for COVID. We want to keep the process moving. We know how hard it is to get egg donors, sperm donors, gestational carriers. That's a whole process. So to cancel in the middle of treatment is frustrating.
Right. And I also want to say, because I talked to you about being infected, getting COVID in pregnancy yesterday with an OBGYN, and they had a really good point. You can get vaccinated, boosted, still do everything right, but right now people are still getting infected. And yes, it's going to happen to people during fertility, you know, treatments. It's going to. And I know that really stinks. But you know, do everything you can, and sometimes even when you do that, you still might get infected. But hopefully, those mitigating things that we recommend will reduce your risks of getting becoming COVID positive during the process, right?
And ultimately, preventing severe COVID infection. Like, we want to prevent you
Yeah,
from going to the
exactly.
hospital. We want to prevent you from being intubated, death. That's what we want to prevent.
Right. Okay. Now here's an getting into this one. So, what do we know about COVID infection infection and fertility in males.
Yeah, so they looked at early studies of this when COVID was first coming out last year, a lot in 2020 and 2021. We know that potentially there can be an impact on the sperm. Again, we can see this decline potentially in sperm production with acute infection. Usually that's going to be patients who are going to have fevers. We are not seeing necessarily long-term impacts on male fertility with COVID infection. And I know you had, like, you were referencing some studies as well that you can definitely share with that.
Yeah, so this is a study that was actually, it's not a study. It is a review that actually just came out this month. Basically, what Dr. Zori was touching on is that when this all started, the testes are one of the tissues in the human body that has a high expression of the ACE2, which is one of the receptors that we know that COVID has an affinity for. And then also for, it's a transmembrane, it's called TMPRSS2. It's another type of transmembrane protease that can also be involved in having the COVID attack certain tissues in the body. So those are both pivotal for viral entry into tissues. But very few sperm have both, which kind of, we found out that that makes it less likely for them to directly invade the sperm, if that makes sense. So there's still some controversy. We don't know exactly how much the virus can potentially invade the testes and the tissues in the testes. But we do know that it can cause scrotal discomfort getting infected, seminiferous tubular injury, which is all involved in making sperm, low sperm motility, oligospermia, cryptospermia, azoospermia. And so there is a potential risk there regarding those if you do get infected as a male or sperm producing individual with COVID. Mm-hmm. So there is some data there. Again, we just don't have, if you get COVID infection, this is what could potentially happen. We're still teasing all that out. Those are hard studies to do, right?
Yeah, they are.
Those are hard studies to do. Yeah.
Really hard.
Anything with fertility is hard to do.
Yeah.
Let's see, there another resource showed that sperm producing individuals with severe COVID have a significantly higher possibility of orchitis. And that's means inflammation of the testes, right?
Yeah.
Then non-severe COVID patients. Patients with severe COVID infection had high levels of inflammatory cytokines, which sometimes it's not the actual virus affecting tissue, it's the inflammation that mm-hmm. it causes that can affect certain tissue. And that's what they've seen in males. And then also you could have inflammation induced blood testes barrier damage that could be a potential explanation of why SARS-CoV-2 causes issues with males. So, and then finally, and we already talked about this, it could infect spermatogenesis or even the production of sperm. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, we do know things can happen with COVID, bottom line,
yes.
right? We know yep. more can happen with infection than yep. the vaccine
yep.
regarding male fertility. Okay, what do we know about COVID infection and female fertility? We actually know less.
Yep, we do.
More complicated, so we know less, yeah.
Less to know. Similar to what you said, there's that ACE2, that expression there that maybe the virus can somehow attach to or attack the ovary, the uterus, the vagina. We have been able to swab the vagina and get positive, you know, COVID tests from that. Mm-hmm. So there's a possibility that that can have an impact on the reproductive system. How that again affects fertility, it's hard to make those like points. We just don't know that. But again, as we're seeing some changes in menstrual cycle volume, is there an impact on the uterine, the expression of proteins in the uterus, on female hormones? You know, those studies again need to continue to come out.
Yeah. So the ACE two receptors are definitely there. There's mm-hmm. no question, and all the tissues of the reproductive tract. But it's, again, those are also hard studies to do with even more, probably more difficult for female egg producing individuals looking at their fertility after COVID infection. Okay. Now I've definitely heard things about getting infected with COVID and erectile dysfunction. What do we know about that?
That's actually a good one. I have not actually heard that. So if you have that more updated information, please.
I do. I actually have, I didn't put the studies there, but there, I have them underneath my highlight, COVID infection and fertility. So it's there. So for some people, what I've read is it lasts longer than others. Obviously, if you have comorbidities, hypertension, diabetes, any kind of vascular type disease that affects the vessels, you're more at risk of potentially having erectile dysfunction. So it definitely happens. So something to consider.
Yep.
If you are a reproductive aged male or sperm producing individual who is thinking about starting a family and you have these comorbidities, that's something to consider. Get vaccinated and protect yourself, because it could, erectile dysfunction means it's going to be hard to, you know, start a family. So we need that. So it's something to consider.
Yeah.
Okay. And then if unvaccinated, is there a specific trimester that is better to get the vaccine? And we already touched on that. And there was a new study that came out 2 days ago. I posted that on my Instagram. And just about, the good thing is that you can get vaccinated pre-pregnancy within 6 weeks is what they looked at. First, second, third trimester, and still have antibodies in the umbilical cord at delivery. So what they found, the highest antibody levels were people who got vaccinated and then got a booster in the third trimester. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that that's what you should do. Basically, it's saying no matter when you get the vaccine, primary series or booster, you're going to have antibodies in the umbilical cord blood at the time of delivery that could be passed, that are passed to the fetus and the neonates. So that's positive. So the best time to get vaccinated is now.
Yep. Agree.
Whenever you can. So that's always the best time to get vaccinated. Let's see, what is this? Okay. So one thing I want to also talk about is way back when, it seems like forever ago, it really wasn't, when we didn't know a lot about what's going on with COVID and the infection rate is actually not what it is now. All these elective surgeries and you guys got hit.
Yep.
Even the fertility cycles, y'all got shut down.
Yep.
And I understand, because we didn't know, it was considered elective, and that's hard to consider any kind of fertility, anything, procedure to be elective, but it was. So what's happening now as far as are you guys getting shut down, or does it depend on where you're at?
I don't see that happening again. I know, and when this initially happened, like, we were short PPE for in hospitals where we needed the ICU doctors, the ER doctors, they had to have PPE. So again, us taking that PPE when we could potentially delay a month or two, they needed that. And so right now we're not in that situation. We have plenty of masks and gloves, and everyone I think has the PPE they need in the US. So I don't foresee us getting shut down again. I think what some clinics are doing, certainly what we have started doing with this surge in cases, is that we're now going back to virtual new patient appointments. You know, we're reducing that kind of in-person exposure, since those are longer, like 1 hour appointments. Yeah. Certainly still people are cycling when they want to, when they're ready, when they need to. But we're just doing, you know, additional testing with that. Different states might have different guidelines on whether they need to test negative for COVID prior to starting IVF. We are recommending the vaccine and the booster. We don't require it, but certainly are recommending it for all of our patients coming in.
Yeah, so it's good to know not only what's going on with your fertility center, but what's going on if you were to become pregnant in the, you know, your obstetrical care provider's office, because everybody can do something a little bit different.
Yep.
So making sure you know ahead of time what the procedures and protocols are, you know, going through the fertility treatments, trying to conceive, then potentially getting pregnant, is really important, especially if you're a high-risk individual.
Yeah.
And high-risk individuals do go through fertility treatments.
Yep.
And say you're high-risk, but where you're planning on going for your obstetrical care is not going to see anybody until 12 weeks. And that they might, some obstetrical care providers are doing that right now. So that's all important things to think about and kind of think ahead.
Yep.
I know sometimes it's hard when you're going through fertility treatments, you know, you're wanting to get pregnant, mm-hmm. but you got to think about is if you do have any kind of comorbidities or, you know, medical complications, should you get pregnant, it's important to know who's going to take care of you.
Yep.
Okay. Let's go through and see what questions we have. Okay. Let's see. So I currently have COVID and my unvaxxed husband and 4-year-old are staying far away. Is there a chance they won't get it? Of course. Yeah. There's definitely a chance. My twins were exposed before Christmas. Our nanny had it. I didn't get exposed to her because I'm never there when she's there. And they didn't get it. Yeah. So thankfully they had actually just completed their second dose of their vaccine. They weren't considered fully vaccinated yet because it hadn't been 2 weeks, but they didn't get it. And they were with her for 2 days. So it's always a possibility that you won't get infected. Are you seeing that too in like partners and that?
Yeah. And I'll share my own personal story. I got it in January of 2021, mm-hmm. right before our office got the vaccine. My husband had gotten the first dose and was a week into his first dose. I was exceedingly sick. I was also 8 weeks pregnant, which was mm-hmm. terrifying. I did not have access to the vaccine yet. My husband did not get it. He tested negative like 6 times. My son had a very mild case, but I was exceedingly sick. Like, and can go into a whole thing about that. I never want to have COVID again in that capacity. I got vaccinated the second I could, and I was pregnant. So I, again, from a personal standpoint, I would get the vaccine in pregnancy, and I did, and I recommend it.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's important for people to hear. Not only did you have COVID, but you were sick, and then you still got vaccinated. And we know we need to hear stories like that. So I appreciate you sharing that. Okay, next question. 33 weeks pregnant, about to get the Tdap next week. Should I wait to get the booster 2 weeks after? So you in pregnancy, you can get the Tdap and the booster or COVID vaccine. This the first, it's called the primary series, is when you get the first two shots if it's an mRNA vaccine, then followed by the third dose, which is actually the booster. But you can get a booster or first or second dose of the primary series along with a Tdap if you want. There's no contraindication to do that, or even the flu vaccine. So that there's no reason to wait. If you're wanting to wait for one reason, I would say a week maybe, I mean, or a few days in between, but there's no reason not to wait any longer than that. What's the research on vaccinating moms passing antibodies to the fetus? I did a whole discussion on that yesterday, so have a listen to that. I don't know why people keep saying Robert Malone. I mean, I know who he is, but I'm not sure he said anything of value. My sister-in-law is pregnant and has COVID, already vaccinated. Is there medicine she could safely take? Yes. So I also talked about that yesterday. If a pregnant individual has COVID, there are various medications that we do give them depending on the severity of their disease. If she is or they are not that sick, then they may not need anything. So it all depends on the severity of the disease, but yes, there are things that we can give. Risk of being unvaccinated in the first trimester. You guys are seeing, you typically see patients up to how many weeks?
Usually 8 to 9, and then they discharge the OB.
Are you, so if they, if you have a patient that's been through fertility, you know, any kind of fertility treatment and then got pregnant, under your care in that window, do you guys typically send them to an OB, or how do you address it?
If, say that part of the first part?
Yeah, if they, while they're under the REI's care, you said 8 to 10 weeks or so, if they happen to get COVID in their period of time, what do you typically do?
I would definitely recommend they talk to their OB at that point. Certainly, like, we're going to be seeing you for that first pregnancy scan around six and a half weeks. We'll see you again 2 weeks later. Usually at that point, we're discharging to OB around 8 weeks or so. If there's any issue where you can't get into your OB, then you come back to us and we can certainly like kind of guide you through that. A lot of fertility doctors don't necessarily have hospital privileges, so it's not like we can go into the hospital to actively manage your case, which is why I want you to get established with an OBGYN as well.
I'm back to search. We already talked about that one. Okay, so basically right now what we're recommending as far as vaccination and boosting, we primarily recommend mRNA vaccines in pregnancy, okay? And that also means getting boosted with an mRNA vaccine as well. If you got your primary series already with J&J, the recommendation in pregnancy is to get an mRNA booster, okay? So, but if you have no other choice and there's nothing else available to you, depending on where you're at, J&J is fine. But if you have a choice, we prefer mRNA vaccination or primary series as well as boosting. This is always a great question, and I'm going to ask you this. People ask me all the time. I have X, Y, and Z. Should we delay trying to conceive? You know, what, because if people are scared of getting COVID and pregnant, and I get that. What do you tell people who ask you that?
No, I wouldn't necessarily delay. Like, you know, we can't, this is probably going to be with us for the that foreseeable future. This is not probably going anywhere anytime soon. So we need to learn how to live with it. We need to protect ourselves and do the best we can, again, with masking and vaccinating. But if you're ready to get pregnant, you know, get pregnant. Don't delay. You don't know, again, if you're going to have fertility issues or not. We know that treatment's going to be better off theoretically the younger you are. And so I would not delay your family bearing if that's, you're ready to, you know, proceed with having a child.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, that's only a decision you can make. Because again, like Dr. Zori said, it's not like I think, oh, by June this year, we'll be good. I can't say that.
I know.
We may be here another year.
Yep.
So especially in certain, you know, maybe if you're of advancing age, you may not want to delay. But kind of thinking ahead and, you know, especially if you have medical complications, are medical, any kind of medical diseases that might place your pregnancy at high risk that would require a little bit more planning and making sure that you have, you know, obstetrical care lined up should you get pregnant, and knowing what that doctor's office can and can't do if you do become COVID positive in your pregnancy. So just a little bit more planning, I think. But again, it's hard for us to tell you what to do because
personal opinions.
It's your personal choice. We're talking about that one. That one is not about the vaccine. Okay, I think that might be it. Mm-hmm. Oh wait. This question was asked yesterday. How concerned should we be about getting COVID or Omicron now? Which in your area, is Omicron the dominant variant?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is for us too. So with vax boosted and otherwise healthy. So what we're seeing in those, the breakthrough infections, is that it's not as severe.
Yep.
And I've seen a lot of pregnant individuals who have been vaccinated that came in for another reason and should triage regarding their pregnancy and happen to test positive and they're asymptomatic. Mm-hmm. And most of them go on to remain asymptomatic. So that's good. But you know, you never know. We have sick patients too.
Yep.
So, you know, we've not had Omicron around enough to say. It kind of came on fast and furiously. Yep. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it was like there were 2 cases in the US and 1 week later it was 95% of the cases.
So, you know, I think the good thing is it seems to me that we have more people that are positive.
Yeah.
But not as many people that were as sick as it was with Delta.
Yeah, agree. Right? That's what I've seen.
But again, that shouldn't give you false or give you a reason not to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
You should still get vaccinated because we do know that people who get get COVID in pregnancy can have adverse pregnancy outcomes and maternal outcomes, even if they have asymptomatic infection. So that's important to know.
Yeah.
We do not see that to the degree that we in people that are vaccinated and boosted.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that might be it. A lot of people came in. So what we'll do with this is we will, I'll post this on my feed. And then if you have any other questions that we didn't answer here, you could put them in the comments and we'll try to get to them and answer them in the next few days. Thank you, Dr. Zori, for your time.
Thank you.
You're always available and always helpful. So I appreciate that.
You too.
And have a great rest of, I'm on call today.
Oh, have fun.
I'm sure I will.
I know.
But you have a great rest of your week and we'll get together soon.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye. I hope you enjoyed that discussion. Now tune in next week for an episode on heart health in the preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum periods.